Fred Film Radio.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2019 Cairo International Film Festival, and I'm very pleased to be joined at this time by Brett Michael Innes, director of Phyllis Child. So thank you very much for joining us, first of all.
It's great to be here. You pronounced everything correctly, so well done.
Pronunciation, I was just talking with a language and speech and dialect specialist, so yeah. Maybe that helped.
It could. I think you've got a mix of Scottish and Afrikaans names in the mix there, so you did pretty well.
and my own voice is a mix of Italian and Irish. I don't know what it is. But anyways, well, I had the pleasure of watching the film, and I loved it, and it's a real pleasure to talk with you about it. But as I mentioned before the interview, this is going to be the most annoying question, let's hope.
I'm bracing myself.
You know what it is. It is, just so that we don't leave any of the listeners who are not familiar with the films, would you care to maybe introduce it a little bit and tell us about the story, just a few words, and then we can talk about it in more detail?
Sure thing. To start off with, it's based on a really iconic novel from South Africa. I guess what To Kill a Mockingbird is to U.S. culture, this novel is to South African culture. It's been studied in schools for the last 30 years. I actually read it as a 12-year-old boy and really moved me, and when I got the opportunity, found out the rights were available, I was really excited to tell it. It's set in the late 1800s in southern Africa, and it tells the story of Phila Kamuti, a mixed-race woman who finds a white toddler on her doorstep and takes him in as her own. And 10 years pass, the government is doing a census in the region, and they see this boy and this family, and they say this cannot be. And they take him from Phila and return him to a family of white woodcutters who had lost a child around the same time. And the story pretty much looks at how these two try to reunite over the span of a decade while coming to terms with their own individual identities.
Well, there's so much that we could talk about, but I'd like to start from the personal aspect of the film and you making the film. You mentioned that this is a very important novel in South Africa and that you remember reading it when you were younger. Do you remember what it was that you liked about it the first time you encountered the novel?
Yeah, I think for me, this is my love letter to my own mother. And I think if I look at the relationship dynamic that her and I have, where she's a short Lebanese woman, and no one can see me now on radio, but I am as pale as you can get. I think that dynamic really fed into that a bit. But seeing or reading the story of a woman who literally walks across mountains to try and get her child back really resonated with me as a young man and made me think of my mom. So for me, the story is about maternal love, but it's also about male identity, and it really, I think, that part of it resonated with me in ways that I couldn't really comprehend at that age, but as I've grown older, just fixed into that space of the question that every man goes through of who am I and what does it mean to be a man, and especially when society defines those roles for you, whether it's around sexual identity or becoming a father or how you conduct your relationships. I think that resonated in a 12-year-old's heart, which only now as a 36-year-old man I'm able to verbalize in a much better way.
And actually, you know, as I sit here thinking about the movie, obviously this film also deals with some dark aspects of the history of South Africa, especially relating to race. Mm. I suppose that as we go on, as history progresses and so on, as we evolve as human beings, it becomes clearer to us that some of the things that were done in the past by all societies were wrong. But is that also one of the aspects that you hope resonates about this film, the race theme?
Yeah, in a big way. For me, it's not the center of frame or the center of our focus, but it's definitely on the edge of frame. And I think the universal experience of a mother and son being the center of frame allows people to then engage with the issues around race in a way that doesn't feel moralistic or like I'm trying to prove a point or have an opinion about it. What's unique about this film, in terms of South Africa's cinematic history, our representation on screen always kind of restricts race relations to the apartheid years, which is actually a very brief part of our history. This is set about 100 years ahead of apartheid and actually shows the conditions that really led to the system of systematic segregation. One where I think what's unique is the main character, who is mixed race, owns land, she actually is educated and really... People were quite, I've had Q&As where people are surprised that was the case, but actually prior to apartheid, if you were a non-white, you were able to own land, and she did. And we actually, And you'll remember from the film, she actually mentions that things are changing. If you think they're going to let brown hands hold onto land, you're blind. And I almost wanted her to be a woman ahead of her time, that she had her finger of the pulse of where the country was heading, and almost address the topic around land and recompensation of that is very, very in the zeitgeist in South Africa at the moment. So I wanted to almost touch on that, but not from the present, rather from the past.
And that aspect that you're talking about, the landowning part, is even a bit problematic by today's standards, especially because we just don't understand, or maybe we have forgotten, people who maybe might have known in the past may have forgotten that these things really did happen. Mm. So while this is a drama that has universal resonance, there are aspects of it that actually help uncover aspects of history that may have been long forgotten. Do you see that as sort of a power of this film too, or filmmaking in general, this just bringing out aspects of the past for people now to see and reflect upon and perhaps, you know, change their mindset in today's world?
Yeah, I really do hope so, because I think if you look at the rise of, I guess, nationalist voice and the building of walls instead of bridges, I think it's coming from a place of having a shallow view of history, of not seeing either crimes that were committed against certain people groups by other people groups, but only going back, say, 50 years or 20 years, or having people who are, I guess, voting leaders into power or creating political support or just social media icons who have opinions that are not rooted in history, that don't consider that 100 years this people group was subjugated to these kind of things, and these are the effects that carry on 50, 60, 70 years down. And then to actually go even further back and look at we're sitting here in Egypt, one of the greatest nations in the world, and a kingdom that has changed its power structures, and to view what we're going through currently in world politics with that same lens, that the ebbs and flows of history, nothing's really new, it just kind of changes a little.
Well, that's right. Before we were talking, we were saying you went to see the pyramids today, and you always read about how they're built. And even just being here, it does make you think that history somehow struggles to move forward unless violence is overcome or violence occurs even. I don't know. That's a thought that I had. I don't know if you have an opinion on that and you agree with that.
I don't know if there's... I receive that sentiment that you've said. I think that violence has moved society forward, and it's also injured people in the process. So as opposed to moralizing over it, I do recognize that that is how civilizations have been born. I can't think of one that isn't built of the backs of slavery or any kind of inequality. Mm-hmm. And I guess the trick is not to either erase history or pretend it didn't happen, but it's to learn from it so that we don't perhaps make the same mistakes again. I don't think the changing of names or taking down of monuments or erasure of history solves the problem. To me, it's to say that it's there, to acknowledge that these things are not right. In my mind, we all have blood on our hands. Some is just fresher than others.
That's exactly. You know, I'd love to actually get deeper into that conversation, but I'm afraid that this podcast will become, an hour-long podcast. But I wanted to go back to the film, and, you know, if the previous two questions were a little too, you know, not complex, but I think I stuttered a little bit, so even I was like, well, where am I going with this? But this is a little more simple one and perhaps a little more cliche, but did you encounter any difficulties in adapting the original novel for the screen?
In a big way. A previous adaptation was done 30 years ago, so not only having the expectation around the novel, but a really iconic performance from the actress who played Fila in the first adaptation. I went into production knowing that expectation rested on us. I was taking a national treasure. I have the added thing of being English as my first language and as my culture, and this is an Afrikaans language and culture story. So in many ways, I am an outsider coming into space that... it was often said in South Africa that an Afrikaans person wouldn't have dared try to tackle this again because the first film was so iconic. But I came in perhaps with the arrogance of an Englishman and really felt that with all classic literature, It can be told over and over and used to contextualize present-day thought. And 30 years had passed. They do a new Spider-Man every 2 years. So I thought we're pretty safe on that regard.
Yeah.
So I went into production knowing that that was there. But actually, from quite a very free place, I was able to create, I think, because we didn't make press releases about it ahead of production. Like, I told actors and crew, no one knows you've got this role. You're not allowed to talk about it. We filmed. I really wanted to protect the sacred space of creation, that expectation voices online wouldn't come into it, because as soon as it was announced, so many opinions came forward.
Right.
Some were really positive. Others were like, why are you guys doing this again? This can be only one narrative, one film, and it's the first one. And I'm so glad I made that choice as a director, because it did affect my actors. But fortunately, they'd done the work, and now it was in our hands as the post-production team to actually piece it together.
Well, as a final question, you know, you kind of mentioned it there, but just how did you work with the actors, and especially the actress who plays the role of Fila? I thought she was fantastic.
Oh, thank you. Her name's Zenobia Kloppers, and I think because the brand was so strong, I was given absolute freedom from the primary financiers to not choose the most famous actors, but rather choose the ones who really earned it in the audition. And that's why you'll see that 70% of the actors, it's their first time on screen. For Zenobia, it was her first time acting. She had a small role in another film, but this was she carried this movie and an iconic character all on her shoulders. The kids we found either in townships or through casting directors, and then some of the other actors who are experienced are slightly more obscure. They're kind of they're not the Instagram models of South Africa. So we really, I love working with people like that, because there's a certain kind of gratitude that comes with just, wow, we're making a movie, and not an entitlement that can sometimes come when you're playing with an A-lister.
sure.
But yeah, I loved working with them. We really, they loved the story, they respected it, and they got the heart that we were coming to it from.
Well, Brett, it was great talking with you, and I wish you all the best. Thanks very much for taking the time and talking with us.
Only a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.